First of all, thanks everyone for coming to today's session. We're going to talk about today if people are running Opalis or Service Manager. We're going to talk about what it takes to actually move those onto the 2012 products, and then talk about some of the capabilities along the way that you may consider when you try to tie these two things together. Hopefully you will after you've seen some of the benefits. First of all, my name is Eamon O'Reilly. I'm a Program Manager on the Orchestrator team within Side System Center. And with me today is Srikant Ranganathan, who is a PM on the Service Manager team inside System Center. So before I get started, I try to talk a few of you just to get a feel for what you're interested in seeing today. The session definitely covers how to move forward from Opalis up to Orchestrator in 2012 and similarly for Service Manager. But just to get a quick show of hands, I try to poll a little bit, but how many people are using Opalis today? Okay, we have a couple, or how many are using Service Manager 10? Okay, we have three or four too, so hopefully you'll get a lot out of the session just on what it takes to move forward, but we also try to cover some of the new capabilities of combining these together for everyone else. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time first just talking through what are the benefits of moving towards System Center 2012 with a particular focus on Service Manager and Orchestrator and how you can start to kind of transition and change towards the new paradigm that 2012 offers. Then we're going to go through some more of the technical details of, okay, what does it take to move from Service Manager up and talk about the new features inside of 2012 Service Manager. And Srikant's going to go through that area. Then I'll talk about Opalis Orchestrator and highlight some of those capabilities. And then we try to end a little bit on bringing them two together. So you'll get to see some demos along the way that kind of showcase how you move things forward, but then also how you make them better together at the end. But I think the two things really to understand, especially if you're using the existing products like Opalis or Service Manager, is there's been a bunch of improvements in 2012. There's been feature enhancements across the board, not just on these two components, but in all the other capabilities inside of System Center 2012. So it's worth learning what are those new capabilities. Spend the time on it before you do the upgrade, because during the upgrade, it's actually a good time to think about how do I leverage some of the new capabilities. And so there might be an opportunity for you to actually go back and alter how you're doing your existing processes to take advantage of the new capabilities. Okay, so I try to find a slide that mostly represents how Microsoft and sees the industry going over the next year or two, and how System Center 2012 really enables that. And so when you think about this slide up there, probably a lot of you have been coming to TechEd or similar conferences over the last few years, and we've been kind of talking about how do we deliver IT as a service? How does IT enable their end users to quickly innovate, to adapt, and come up with new capabilities themselves? And so we've been pushing this, how do we get to IT as a service? And it's been difficult. I think a lot of the challenges were we started to change infrastructure on us. So virtualization came in. And so that put a lot of pressure on how do we standardize and deliver IT as a service when the hardware requirements are changing on us. And then the management tools started to change. And so we've been pushing and really striving to get towards this goal of enabling IT to deliver value immediately to their end users. And that's really what about IT as a service is, or IT on demand. And so the real two pieces of the puzzle that we figured out along the way is you really need some way as a portal for your users to go in and ask for what they need. And then you also need the ability to actually deliver those services directly to the end user in an automated way. And so the two components of System Center 2012 that allows that is Service Manager 2012 and then the Orchestrator piece that we got when we acquired Opalis and brought into the System Center family. So when you think about it, focus on how do you actually potentially transform how your IT is working by leveraging these two capabilities along with the rest of System Center. So what does it really take to deliver IT as a service? I think the first thing we learned along the way was you have to get some standardization. If you allow your end users every single customization they want, it's very hard to adapt in real time to that. So you have to come up with a set of services that actually are going to meet their needs that are standardized across the board. And then once you can come up with those standard services, you then need the ability to offer them to those users in a way they can consume. So you want role-based access to those services. And then if they do select a service like give me a VM or deploy my application or add this user into AD, reset my password, depending on what they have, you really need that request to happen automatically. If behind the scenes you still have to go and do manual tasks, you're not going to get to IT as a service or IT on demand because all you've done is put one layer in front of them. It'll help you, but you'll still never really get to the immediate innovation that we're looking for. But with Orchestrator and with automation, you can actually now tie all these different pieces together. So as the user requests it, you can deliver it, and they'll just get that email or they'll get the notification that their service is actually up within minutes, perhaps, instead of days that it may have taken in the past. So this is how we've done it in System Center to really deliver on IT as a service by embracing these three concepts and enabling them through Service Manager 2012 as well as Orchestrator 2012. So hopefully that gives you an overview of where we're going with 2012 and what you can do as you go back to your organizations and start thinking about Service Manager and Orchestrator and the rest of the products. But we're going to spend a few minutes now kind of going through what does it take for each one of these products, if you're using them today, to consume this new technology in 2012 and bring forward the investments you have today. So if you have a policies and you want to bring those forward or you've done a bunch of work in Service Manager, we're going to walk you through what it takes to bring you to 2012 and then come around again and show you how they work better together. So Srikant, I'll give you this and hopefully you can go through some of the Service Manager.
Sure. Thank you, Eamon. So let me just make sure that this works. Okay. So as Eamon shared before, so what I'll be doing is to show what we have learned in taking Service Manager 2010 into Service Manager 2012. And I've been engaging with a lot of TAP customers and other customers who have upgraded, so I'll be sharing those best practices here. And if you're using Service Manager 2010, you can actually leverage these things into bring it to the 2012 stack. And later on, we'll go through a similar exercise with Opalis. So right now, let me focus on Service Manager. So here are the objectives of this session, at least I'm concerned. So I want to make sure that this is an upgrade in any organization is going to be a fairly intensive task, so there's a fair amount of planning that needs to go into that. So I'll share some of the best practices around that. And I have a demo that's planned, and I'll actually walk you through at least some initial steps of the demo to make sure that we do have an upgrade. And in my spare time, I've also created a tool that I have not shared broadly, but I thought I will be blogging about it shortly. And I'll show it here, so that you can use that as a planning function when you're trying to upgrade. It doesn't have to be an upgrade functionality. It's just another planning tool in your set that you can actually prepare your topologies with. And the takeaways from this session, at least for the 20-minute session, I hope would be that, hey, you can actually plan, upgrade successfully, and then there's a minimal amount of downtime. And there are a lot of success stories with our customers who have upgraded, and I want to make sure that you are aware of those. And their best practices that we've helped them through the TAP customers, they've taught us and we have taught them. It was a journey the last 1 year. So I want to make sure that those are available for you and it is available for you. And we have an upgrade guide that actually goes through the step-by-step instructions. I want to make sure you are aware of those documentation and take advantage of them. So those are the objectives. So with that said, with any upgrade, the first question that one would ask is, why should I bother? Right? Until there's enough value prop into the upgraded stack, there is not much of a reason why we should even upgrade. So I want to take a few minutes and say in the Service Manager 2012 stack, we have made our 2012 stack about 20 to 30% faster across the board. And then there are feature areas within the 2010 and 2012 features which are much, much higher than that. So perf alone would be a pretty good reason as to why one you want to consider an upgrade. Our ability to actually support number of consoles per server has also increased. So we are now up to 80 consoles per server, and we're continuing to go back and improve. And our investments will be in the 2012 area where we continue to improve our ability to go back and serve more and scale up, both scale up and scale out. So those are some of the reasons why you might want to consider upgrade. In addition to that, we have made a lot of investments in the features themselves. We got a lot of feedback in terms of how to invest in parallel activities and relationships. We have done all those things in the 2012 stack, a pretty good reason as to why you want to do that. And also, we invested in new solutions. So if people are using 2010, you'll probably find that we have introduced self-service. Eamon talked about self-service as one of the pivots that we're using for private cloud, and it's now out of the box. We have a solution that actually allows you to actually stand up a data center using self-service and providing some amount of chargeback along with that. Again, a new investment in our solutions. And Service Manager is an integration product. It brings data from other products within System Center, other components within System Center, and also outside to populate the CMDB. It is an integration stack. It's an integration product. So we've invested in more connectors. So we have VMM connectors, which are now bringing all the cloud data into CMDB. We have orchestrator connector. Eamon just mentioned about that, and that's going to be a little more in our talk today. You'll be able to actually take advantage of representing your service requests in the form of in Service Manager and directly actually invoke runbooks in Orchestrator to facilitate the automation. So in order to do that, we need to have a connector to and bring runbook data into Service Manager. Those kind of investments are already happening. And then we also have data warehousing. So we bring data from other products and allow you to build OLAP queues and report on that. So investments have gone into that as well. And we touched upon this briefly. So we have a new feature called Service Catalog and SLAs, modeling your SLA. So that'll help you in incident management as well as in other help desk activities. So these are some of the investments that we have done in 2012, not available in 2010, and would be good amount of pivots as to why you would want to consider an upgrade. Just to summarize, we have PERF, we have feature improvements, and actually other actually solutions that we have invested with. So as with any stack changes, any major releases, we have prereq changes. I want to walk through those prereqs so that you are prepared. And I look at upgrade as another planning function. And the more information that you have, the better prepared you are so that you can make your upgrade successful. So I'll walk you through some of the things that you should be aware of and be planning for. To start with, we have not changed our hardware prereqs. So that's actually a good thing. So if you have an existing hardware that we have invested in, 2010 and 2012, you don't have to change your hardware. You might want to change it for other reasons, but certainly not because Service Manager is demanding that. However, that is not true in the case of software. So we have changed some of our software prereqs, and in my experience with the TAP customers, the more information that people have in terms of the recs that are changing, it gives them a much visibility in terms of their planning exercise. To start with XP, if an organization is using XP for their consoles today, it's not supported anymore. And this might have some impact in terms of how you want to roll out your upgrade. The terminal services is the only workaround right now. But we are expecting at this point in time the XP is not that. I mean, this is a statement today in terms of you're not supporting your XP. We are expecting people to be on Win 7 or other OSs right now, but certainly not XP. That's something that you need to worry about in terms of your planning. With respect to 2010 version of SM, we did support Firefox, but that's no longer possible with our 2012 stack, partly because we have taken a dependency on SolarLight, and you need to be aware of that, because now the number of supported browsers goes down, and is right now IE8 and IE9. I'll go into that a little detail later on, but the most important thing is, if you're using Firefox in your current deployment, portal experience is going to be compromised because that's no longer a supported client for 2012. Similarly, there are changes in the operating system as well. We used to support R2, and now it's R2 SP1. This is an SP1 upgrade. At this point in time, we find it fairly okay to actually mandate this. And we have other components that, as part of our data warehousing infrastructure, we expect these prereqs to be there. So if you are interested in data warehousing and you want to watch the cubes and build self-service reports, there are certain management objects that you take a dependency on. Lastly, the software prereq on the portal. As I mentioned sometime before, we have taken a new dependency on SharePoint 2010. That wasn't the case with SM 2010, but with SM 2012, our portal experience is built on SharePoint. And our experience is going to be actually a site within SharePoint with a SilverLight web part, so there's a SilverLight dependency that goes with that. So in order to facilitate this experience, we need .NET 4.0, And then also it restricts the the number of browsers that can actually participate in this experience. We do recommend Enterprise, but it does actually work with standard edition of SQL 2008. And the difference that I've actually observed, and we have documented this, is going to be one around scalability. So if you're, these are documented, and you can help use that documentation to pivot your installation, whether your standard is okay or you need Enterprise. But it's largely around batch processing for cubes. So those are all the software prereq changes, but we're also changing some licensing model, and you probably are aware right now that System Center is going to be available as one big license as opposed to individual components. But having said that, with respect to SM, if you had a prior version of SM, and this is how it'll actually be migrated to, an eval version continues to stay eval, and that is super important for you to know, and a licensed version will turn into a licensed version, regardless of what type of license that you have. And if you're a tap customer, and if you have an RC version of it, you could upgrade it to RTM. But if you're a not tap customer, you would not have access to RC, then you're totally fine. You take your existing version of 2010, and you can upgrade it to 2012. But please be aware that if you're an eval version, you need license keys to get to licensed version. So one common area that people fall into, and that's partly because the feature doesn't exist, is people think that, hey, I can use a license key much later on and activate it, but there's no activation feature for SM. So you cannot go from eval to licensed. You can stay with eval, you can get it licensed, or during upgrade, you can actually go from licensed to licensed. Except for tap customers, we allow RC to licensed. So if you have an RC version, which is an eval, it will be licensed, but you need the license key at that point in time. Yes, please.
Can you clarify, can you take an eval install and change it into a licensed install?
No, you cannot, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
So if you have an eval install, you've got everything installed on, you have to blow it away to change it into a licensed version.
Okay, so I'll repeat the question for others too. So the question from the audience is, we have an eval install, and we want to take it to a licensed version. The currently for SM, that is not possible. And eval will expire at some point in time. Or if you have an RC version of 2012, you've been part of our tap customer experience, and you've installed RC, you can upgrade to 2012 licensed version. But if you are not a tap customer, and if you have 2010 version of eval, that's the only thing right now that can be in eval for you, you will not be able to bring it to licensed version. You can reinstall it, you can upgrade it, and when you upgrade it, you can license from licensed, or you need a license key at that point in time. So just to summarize, you cannot take a 2012 eval license and install a license key and take it to 2012 licensed. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to make sure that people are aware of this in their planning exercise. So thank you for asking the question. So the supported upgrade paths, this is another common question that I keep getting, which is what are all the upgrade paths that you support? And today we support in-place upgrades. So if you have a 2010 version of it, you can. We have taken great pains to ensure that your data is preserved. So we do support in-place upgrades only. It's not uncommon with other System Center products as well. But that's the only supported story today. What is not supported is a rolling upgrade. And by rolling upgrade, I mean that there are two side-by-side versions. Some customers are using 2010, some customers are using 2012, and you want to phase it over a period of time slowly. That's not supported. So you have to actually have a downtime, a small downtime, upgrade them, and then bring them all back. And we do have, we upgrade all your customizations, we upgrade all your data, and we have done all those things. But side-by-side upgrade over a period of 6 months or something like that, those are not scenarios that we support today. A lot of customers have asked that I do need side-by-side upgrade. Our best practice recommendation at this point in time is we have published APIs, we have orchestrator support. So you have to do out-of-the-box work if you want to do it, depending upon your scenarios, how to do these, but this is something that you're taking it upon yourself, and it's a non-zero cost, not out of the box, and you need to plan for it. You can reach out to our partners, and you can reach out to our field and product teams, and we can help you to do that. But this is not out of the box. This is something that the best recommendation right now is do an in-place upgrade, and I have taken people, customers in production to do this, and I have documented enough steps to help you minimize risk, and that's what I'll be advocating today. Just to summarize, if you are in 2010 SP1 CU3, you can come directly to 2012 by doing an in-place upgrade. If you're a TAP customer, or if you had 2012 RC, you can still come to RTM. Just please remember that you need to have your license keys with you. Another compatibility during upgrade that you might want to think about is about OM and SM. We do ensure that your existing SharePoint, I'll talk about that later on, but in we do support Ops Manager 2007 R2 as well as Ops Manager 2012. The difference is in Ops Manager 2012 stack, it's going to be an agentless monitoring, and that one is agent-based monitoring. And so people have asked me about this, and there's a FAQ at the end of the session that I have, as well as more documentation available in terms of what does it mean to be agentless, what scenarios are compromised, what happens to SharePoint, and those are covered a little later on in the document. And another one that you might want to plan about is it's not just the system center topologies that you need to worry about. You might have Provance, you might have other third-party components for either asset management or compliance, what have you. Our partners have not had a TAP experience with us. So when we did release RTM, none of our partners actually were able to actually upgrade their stack at the same time. They're all coming back in about 2 to 3 month window a little later on after our GA. So my request is please work with your partners in terms of if you have a dependency and ensure that it does work on 2012 stack and make this as part of your planning activities. So very quickly, what you're going to see in the next few minutes is the result of about 8 to 9 months of my TAP engagement with a variety of TAP partners. And if they are here, thank you very much. You guys taught us a lot. So this is the digest of those. And they have been already documented in our documentation that we went GA with. So you get the benefit of those as well. But at the minimum, what I'm recommending to people is when you think of upgrade, treat it like any other project. And when you put that kind of hat on, you automatically identify all the things that you need to do. And one of the things that, the most important thing that I found to be useful is to create a sandbox environment. And not only just create a sandbox environment, make sure that you have your production data in the sandbox environment so that you can, when you do your UAT and you do your testing, your scale and PERF scenarios are as close as possible to what you would encounter in production. And we have documentation that will actually help you accomplish this. And this, trust me, has saved our TAP customers a lot of pain, especially when they're dealing with betas and RC bits, to have this kind of an environment and planning in place. I want you to benefit with that as well. So this is a rough outline of what I recommend. You do prepare a sandbox environment. Make sure that you extract your production data and bring it into your sandbox environment. Those are very easy steps that we have identified in our documentation to help you with that. And these have been TAP verified as well and currently used in the field as well. Stand up your stand-up environment and make sure that you do an in-place upgrade. So when you do your 2012, it does stand up. You can actually do your UAT, ensure that it actually does measure up to your standards. And you also, most likely you'll have a bunch of customization that you have done. So you can actually document these steps so that when you do an in-place upgrade in production, it's much, much less riskier, and it's actually a known entity at that point in time. So along the way, Service Manager does allow you DR scenarios, but what I found out very early in beta, our customers were still not taking the DR scenarios pretty seriously. It's only when during the RC time frame that they actually got a grip on that. This was super important because upgrades do fail. It's fairly complex. And when it does fail sometimes, it's the only way out of that is to actually restore your snapshot. And if it's not a VM, and that's even more harder, you have to recover the system through other means from your backup. So please do plan this, and this might actually come back and save you a lot of time up front. This requires that you actually have an environment where you can actually go back to. So with that said, let me very quickly show you an in-place upgrade story. So when you do run Service Manager, I keep telling that this is the in-place upgrade story only. So what you do is you actually get the bits and then run setup. And setup will recognize that this is indeed a fresh install or an existing 2010 install and give you an option to upgrade. Early on, we talked about some of the investments that we have done in terms of other solutions, so you get an opportunity to see those as well. This is an example is a cloud services process pack, but let's ignore that for a second. So you have Service Manager, and we've added some, since the documentation is complex, and I mean the upgrade can become a little bit of planning, so we ask you to actually go back our documentation, please read them. This is just a... So I want us to focus on this a little bit. So the gentleman there asked me sometime back about eval and licensed version. This is an example. This installation that I'm trying to upgrade is an eval version, and it's now going to go back and make it an eval version as well because I don't have a product key right now. Please remember, if your eval version is already expired, this is of no use. We actually detect that. And this is not going to extend your eval version period as well because that becomes another vector. So if you have only 5 days left in your eval, after upgrade, you'll only have 5 days left. Upgrade does not automatically extend the evaluation period. The original evaluation period is still honored. So, which is why it's super important at this point in time that since the product is already GA'd, please have your license keys with you unless you know that this is a demo and a prototype scenario where definitely that's what eval is for. Okay, so demo is not working, but I do have a fallback. So one of the first things that will happen is, as I mentioned, some of our prereqs have changed with respect to our 2012 version. So the prereq checker will catch all those things and help you identify whether it meets the prereq or not. The prereqs that I showed you earlier on the screen are the ones that are in the software as well. I talked about the evaluation extensions, so please be aware of that. So there are two parts, as you probably know. One was for the Service Manager management server, another is the data warehouse. There are certain quirks that you should be aware of. In the data warehouse, we are actually creating data marts. And our documentation actually says that you need to have a certain size, which is awesome for a production implementation. But oftentimes, when you're actually doing a proof of concept, when you're doing a demo, you want to quickly bring something up. And you don't necessarily need the 80 gigabyte of hard disk space. You might probably have to do with less. Under those circumstances, what happens is you have these defaults here have been identified for production use. And sometimes if the actual hard disk ask is not measuring up, I mean space is not measuring up to the ask, there'll be a downstream failure. So please be aware of that. These sizes here are for production use, especially for data warehouse, it does consume some hard disk space. And this is a tricky part. When it gets to that, it's going to give you some kind of an error. And the error is going to be, hey, the create database fail. So you need to be able to quickly look up what's wrong. And it's not pretty obvious here. It's the size that's actually coming back and hurting you. So just watch out for that. Our documentation calls these out. But this is an opportunity for me to share that as well. This is the most common error that we get. Somewhere in the log file, there is actually a statement that says we do not have enough sufficient disk space, but it's going to be hidden again in midst of other log files, and if you pick it up, awesome. But the best way is to make sure that reduce the size here so that you don't run into that problem. These are production values or have sufficient hard disk space. That's an example. And what amplifies this error and is the fact that in order to, I'll go back here. When you get this, if you actually go back and read the last line, it says upgrade successfully rolled back to its previous version, and you can retry it. That's not fully true. Depending upon the state of where things actually got lost, it's not going to be successfully rolled back. So, which is why I've been emphasizing that you plan for your DR, and you, when you encounter these kind of errors, go back and make sure that you restore it back in order to have full peace of mind. Otherwise, you're going to have an inconsistent state, and we're going to run into more problems. So the easiest mechanism would be to have virtual machine-based infrastructure. You snapshot it to get it back. If that's not possible, restore it from a backup. You're still good. But I would really emphasize that you get back to a known state and not take this that it's been rolled back successfully to its spirit. The spirit of it is correct, but it's not technically going to work all the time. So having said that, I want to just take the opportunity to deliver. Hopefully this demo will work. So one of the pain points that I thought was during my experience in getting up is the planning function. So give me 1 second, let me type this. So this is something personal to me, because what happens is in a planning function is you want to set up your topology, you want to get the software prereqs done, you want to get the machines done, except that if you look at the product today, you have two pieces of things to work with. One, you have some documentation, and then you have to actually have the software with you. Until you run this piece of software on the machine, you're not going to know the full prereq checks. And at that point in time, he's going to come back and say, I can't proceed. You stop, you go back and spend the next 3 days trying to go fight your organization and get those bits necessary or do whatever it is. So these are all our deployment blockers, in my opinion. And anything that we can ease the pain up front is something that I thought would be useful. So this is something that I've been working in my spare time. I haven't really blogged about it yet, but I thought I'll show it here. It's a very simple PowerShell script. It has an input file that tells you, here is the IP address of the machine or the name of the machine, and this is the role that I want to do on that machine. And you can just specify one or more of those and then run them. It'll remotely go talk to all those machines, come back and run the prereq checker and tell you whether you... It's a read-only scenario, so just let me do it here. So in this particular case, the input file specifies a bunch of machines and some roles, and I'll show you those files later on. It's going through all those things and finding out whether it can reach them to begin with. Once it's reached them, then it's going to run a set of prereq checks. And then it's going to tell you whether it's passed or it's if it fails, it's going to tell you what to do in those cases. And I think this is particularly useful, and Field is using it a lot, and we have some customers in TAP using it a lot. I haven't blogged about it, though, which is a nice planning function. When oftentimes when you're setting up an environment, you don't know whether you got recycled machines, how the machines got where they were. And you can't wait for the real software to arrive in order to actually test them out. You can actually run this remotely sitting in your machine. It goes back, collects all those things. And for example, in this particular case, I haven't actually enabled Windows Auth, which is a primary requirement. I haven't done many things. So I can, for this particular role, so for example, on the local host, I really want to do the management server. I want to do DW, it's coming back, and so if I can go through this list remotely, it's awesome. So I just wanted to share it out, and there's been a lot of interest from the field and customers. Maybe in about a month or so, I thought I'll blog about it, but I'll share it here first. So that's the end of my session, and I'll bring it back to...
Great.
So, and there are some questions that we'll take at the end of the session. So there's a FAQ that I prepared. And if there are more, then we can. I'll take it right after the overall demo.
Awesome. Thanks, Srikant. Okay. So I think the takeaway there is, you know, do some planning. But they've done a lot of work in the service manager team to enable you to upgrade, which is not the case when we get to Opalis. So we You get to my...
Yeah.
Here we go. So we don't do an upgrade from a Palace to Orchestrator. We do a migration. And so I'm going to walk you through what that migration looks like. It's not as detailed as FreeCONF because the migration is actually pretty straightforward. You just have some work to do. But it's easy to describe what the work you have to do. But it is a migration. So you may be wondering, if you're using a Palace or any if you're not, what are some of the new features or new enhancements we've done? So a lot of you know with Apollos, we acquired a company that did the runbook automation. And so what we've been doing over the last year and a half really is trying to incorporate all of those capabilities into System Center and then adding some feedback from customers like you who have been using it to actually improve on it and integrate it better with the rest of the System Center suite. But if you've been using Apollos, it's a very similar model when you start using Orchestrator. But we have done some feature enhancements. I think the biggest one, I know when I joined the team, I installed Apollos, went through that process. It was actually a very difficult process, and now with Orchestrator, it's the exact same process you have with the rest of System Center, and it's a very streamlined, simple way to get up and running within a few minutes, and you can actually start building runbooks. So we've completely changed the install experience to make it easy for you to get value. The next thing we've done is we have a REST web service now. There was a Java web service that was enabled with Apollos. We wrote that into a REST OData web service. And the big benefit of that now is we actually have a lot more clients that can integrate with us. So you'll see later on, we actually have Service Manager now that can integrate into that web service and actually control the runbooks. And so we create a seamless integration. But we've had a lot of customers actually write their own portals, perhaps use SharePoint or Silverlight or something else, and just call directly into our web service to manage the runbooks automatically based on what an end user will do. And our third use of it is we actually redid our orchestration console. So this is our ability for IT to actually figure out what's happening with all the runbooks. Are some in a failure rate? How many have succeeded? This gives you visibility across all the different runbooks in your organization. And that Silverlight console also talks to the same REST OData web service. So again, it's a pretty flexible and powerful web service we've built that hopefully you'll get a lot of benefits out of if you move from Apollos up to Orchestrator. There's some smaller features I won't go through, but a lot of customer feedback was around, you know, what's our security? How do we make sure that as we move to Orchestrator, all of the Microsoft best practices are actually incorporated in? So we spent a lot of time just improving the overall quality of Apollos to bring it up to the standards of Microsoft. And so there's a list up here you can see, but globalization support is actually in the product where it wasn't before. We've done accessibility on the orchestration console. And then we've done a bunch of management capabilities, like having a management pack for operations managers, so you can tell if Orchestrator is healthy. And if not, why not? And similarly, a best practice analyzer. So there's a lot of core features that are built into Orchestrator that you'll get immediate value from once you upgrade from Apollos to Orchestrator. Well, migrate, I'll say. So the first thing to think about is, if you're using Apollos, we've changed the terminology. Two reasons, really. One is to bring it kind of into the industry, best way of describing how automation works, and also to align it with System Center terminology. So if you're familiar with all these terms, most of them are changing, but hopefully they're not a big change for you. This is what they are now. So if you had policies in the past, they're now called runbooks. They work the same, they look the same, but the name is different. So if you don't get your head around the names first, it can kind of get confusing as you read the documentation and you try to get familiar with what Orchestrator can do. Objects have gone to activities, and the whole list is here about how to move forward on everything. But learn the terminology, because this gets reinforced through all of our documentation, all of the samples, everything else that's available for Orchestrator. But fundamentally, it's a very similar model. But one thing that hasn't changed is, what is the deployment? What does the architecture look like? So if you're using Apollos today, it's going to look very similar to this architecture, I bet. The names may have changed, but the way it's built and the way it's going to be built as you move forward is identical. So you're going to have a management server that's actually going to control access to all of the runbook authoring and give different users the ability to author different runbooks. And how those are done is through designers. They used to be the Apollos clients, they're now called designers. And this gives IT administrators the ability to author and then control access through the management server and get access to the database. The other two big areas we have then are our runbook servers. So these are the things that actually do the work. So these are what are going to talk back to the database, figure out what runbooks need to be run, and they're going to run them. And so just the way you may have them distributed today in Opalis, you'll probably distribute them in a very similar way in Orchestrator, because they work fundamentally the same way. And then the last area for deployment is our web features. So you had that old Java-based client that was in Opalis. This is where you'll actually go with IIS and Silverlight and that OData REST web service I talked about. So the exact same layout you've had with Opalis, so it's not a big change from that perspective. But you'll, we do only use the latest technology. So we only use SQL 2008 R2, and we only use Windows 2008 R2. So you will need to get to the latest stuff in order to deploy it. We're working on it. So we're working on Windows 2012, SQL 2012. So it'll be coming hopefully pretty soon. So both those are going to come out together. And the question was, when do we support SQL 2012?
So we're announcing CTP1 version of our pretty soon, so it'll have some support for that.
Yep. Okay, so if you're familiar with building runbooks or policies in Opalis, you'll probably build them on one of the versions. So when we bought Opalis, they've been around for a long time, so they had a lot of previous versions of the product out there. So I talked to a lot of you before we started the session. There wasn't actually that many. I saw like two or three hands that came up at Opalis, maybe four. But if you're using the old Opalis, these robot versions, anything before 6.3 basically, or 6.2 specifically, then you're going to have to upgrade to 6.3, and then you can migrate over. So there's a process to get to 6.3 that's well documented on our website, and then once you get there, that's how you can move over to Orchestrator. Probably most of you are on some version of that, of either 6.2 or 6.3 at the moment. Okay, so depending on how you've built your policies in Opalis, you may have work to do or you may not. If you've taken advantage of any of the legacy mode, so there was two engines in Opalis. There was a legacy mode, we called, that executed the policies in a certain way, and then we have a pipeline mode that executed them more in a sequential way, and that's kind of the way we brought forward as the best practice. But some customers, like some of you may have been using legacy, if you have, you'll need to reauthor those policies and actually get them to use pipeline mode. Most of you probably have not, because you have to actually turn it on in the product separately. But if you have, this is going to have to take rework. But I mentioned the migration is actually not that bad, and it really isn't. I'm going to show you a little bit about that. If you have an up-to-date policies on Opalis, you should be able to move them over relatively quickly and start getting them up and running in Orchestrator. And I'm going to show you how that's done. So what does it look like? So it's not the upgrade you saw from Srikanth. You don't have to put a DR solution in. So there's a benefit one, because you're going to have Opalis around while you actually move it over to Orchestrator. And that's because you have to install a new server, and it can't be on the same box, and you have to install the latest Windows and SQL. So then what do you do? There's an export functionality that's in Opalis. You go in and you just export all of your policies out. So all that work you did, it's contained inside these policies. You export them out and you put them on a share. That's all you have to do. Then you jump over to Orchestrator you just built out and you import them. So there's import functionality. And it's going to bring them all in. And then I talked a little bit about some of the activities that aren't brought forward. So legacy activities that we had in Opalis, they're not available inside of Orchestrator. So you're going to have to do some work to actually go back, update those, take advantage of some of the new activities, and then get your runbooks running again in Orchestrator. And the last thing you do is just test them out. So we have the runbook tester. Just like we had the client tester back in Opalis, you can actually go validate your runbooks are good, ensure everything brought over the way you wanted it to, and once it's done, you can turn off the Opalis stuff, turn on Orchestrator, and you're up and running. So there's some benefits for the migration side by side. It's a little bit more work, but the process itself is relatively straightforward, and you have time to work on some of the rewriting if it's required while you leave your Apollos infrastructure running. And then once you're up and running, you have it the way you want, you do a switch over. Okay, so I'm going to jump in, hopefully here, and show you what that might look like. All right, so for you, most of you, at least the people who raise their hand that are using Apollos, this is what it looks like. So here's our designer that's in Apollos. And first thing you'll notice is, you know, we have policies, and I've imported some policies to actually show you. So we had a bunch of samples we built when we acquired Apollos that we put up on the website that basically show you all the different capabilities, or most, that you could do with the product. And so I imported them there into Apollos just so we'd have them. And then I created a TechEd one as a demo as well that integrates into Service Manager. And so this allows you to actually touch Service Manager 10 with Apollos and do, in this scenario, its application deployment. So you have a process where you want to deploy applications, but it's being managed by Operations Manager. There's a flow in here that'll say, okay, I'm going to put this app, server into maintenance mode, update Service Manager to say, go ahead, deploy your software. Once it gets deployed, it's going to monitor for that and then enable Operations Manager to go and start monitoring it again. So this is one of those automated things you'd want to do in your infrastructure, whereas previously you may have to go and coordinate all this by email. So we're going to automate a lot of tasks you would normally do through, in the past, Apollos, and now in the future, through Orchestrator. And I brought over some legacy ones as well. I don't want to go through every single step, because we have, if you go to our TechNet, there's a whole set of documentation on migration that talks about every legacy object that was there, how to move it over, what the equivalents are. We even have a SQL script that's available here to run against Apollos that will actually tell you which activities are not moving forward, and it'll tell you what policies are in. So I could just copy this and paste it in to SQL, and it will actually go and do it. So let me just do that real quick. Control C. I'd advise this to get, just to get an idea of what you're up against when you do the migration. So here, you can see there's three policies that actually have activities that are not supported in Orchestrator. So you'd have to go in and alter those before you import them over. Or if you don't, they're not going to work when you bring them over. OK, so let me just show you then what it takes to actually bring these over. OK, all you have to do is select one. I'll select these here. Just go to export, like I described. And I've done this before, but let me just redo it again and see if we can bring it up. Okay, I'm going to go to session example. If you're not familiar, this is how we actually go about bringing everything over. We can export global configuration. We could export anything we wanted here. But I'm just going to export everything under TechEd, which is those, just those two. So it's very quick. So at that stage, you're done with Apollos. So if you go back, the next thing you do is you go over, you build up Orchestrator. Pretty quickly, you'll be able to get it up and running. And then you want to bring over those exported policies and make them runbooks. Get the terminology in Orchestrator, and then they'll be up and running. So let me go ahead and do that. OK, so here's Orchestrator. So you barely tell the difference, but we did give it a refresh, so you can kind of tell the icons look new, looks a little cleaner overall, but very similar. So whatever you've learned in Apollos, you can bring forward into Orchestrator. So all that user knowledge you gained around how to create policies, the best practices, it all still applies when you get to Orchestrator. So that's something to be aware of. OK, but so what do we do? So we click on Runbooks, and we go Import. Go and select. Here's the session example. I'm not going to bring anything over. You could if you wanted to. And it's importing everything. So there they go. So now, if I go and select on TechEd, you can see it brought over those two same policies I used to have in Apollos, another runbooks and orchestrator that I can go ahead and execute. I'm not going to go in ahead do that because we have a demo in the end that tries to show you an even better way of integrating Service Manager with Orchestrator. But if you do have it built like this in the SM10 and Opalis and you want to keep it, it'll continue to work. So I just want to show that that's possible using your existing investments. Okay, so that's the demo. And then we're going to go back and talk for a few minutes about what it actually takes to integrate both of these products together. Okay, I think I have two more slides. So the first one is, what happens to integration packs? So Orchestrator and Opalis's real value was on integrating into other systems, then controlling, orchestrating those systems, and then eventually automating them. And so how we did our integration was through integration packs. So this could go into a bunch of different systems in your environment. So if you have them running in Opalis, you're going to have to get updated ones for Orchestrator. So this could be where your work is. We have most of the System Center ones available on the website, so you would just download them, install them like I did on the new Orchestrator server, and then they would just come over seamlessly. If there's ones that aren't available, then you're going to have to come up with workarounds and actually go and build them yourself or rechange some of your policies. So you kind of want to know what integration packs you're using and are they available in Orchestrator before you jump in and actually move forward. The good news is, because all of the activities replace the ones in 6.3, all of your policies just continue to work once you actually get integration packs for Orchestrator. And if you built any yourself, so we have a toolkit that's a powerful way to build your own integration packs in Opalis and Orchestrator. If you've built them there, you're going to have to do some work, and I'll talk about it here, to move them over. So it used to be called KIC, Quick Integration Kit, in Opalis. More terminology changes. It's now called Orchestration Integration Toolkit, but very similar in capability. And so they're going to have to be updated. Again, it's a relatively simple process. So we have different ways to build integration packs. You can build them in C#. You can use just PowerShell. You could use batch commands. But whatever you did, you're going to have to do some work in order to get them into the Orchestrator format. And the biggest reason for that was we completely changed the underlying security model just to get to Microsoft best practices. So everything is dependent on that now. Okay, so you've brought Opalis up to Orchestrator. Hopefully you've got SM up to SM12. You're starting to think about all the different capabilities that System Center 2012 gives you. I want to highlight a little bit for the last few minutes how you can actually bring these two together to actually make them work in a way that actually offers that IT as a service or IT capabilities to your end user. Okay. So Srikanth, I'm going to hand over.
Okay. Thanks, Eamon. So when Eamon and I thought about, so during MMS, there's a lot of requests to bring Service Manager and Orchestrator together. So when Eamon and I were sitting there and saying, what scenarios that actually best amplify and showcase our best practices that we want our customers to adopt? So we came upon a scenario that we'll probably show right now. And the core takeaway for that is there's going to be a human. So Service Manager is largely a process engine on one side. And we keep talking about self-service. We're talking about automation. So in the Opalis example that you talked about, the Opalis is doing the automation, but it's actually looking for, it's a polling for state changes on SM in order to actually go do certain things it's supposed to do. That's one way of accomplishing it. Another better way of accomplishing this is if a process actually requires a human interaction that fires off this process, let that drive the rest of the automation, and that's what you'll probably see today. So imagine, this is a very common scenario, imagine that you are responsible for keeping up a particular app. And the app has been deployed on a server, and it could be anything, but right now for our illustration purposes, here is an app that you're responsible for keeping it up. The development organization has now released a newer version of that. So in this context, and assuming that you have the rest of the System Center 2012 stack all running at this point in time, typically this is what you would have. You would have a server that is being monitored by Ops Manager, and then Ops Manager actually can send alerts to Service Manager and using our alert connector. And those alerts can actually turn into incidents, and then somebody's now actually working on that incident, and then those incidents will be processed, and the problem will be resolved, and you go back and put the machine back into a good state again. So imagine such a system is in place, and then here is a server that needs to be now brought down, or some updates need to be performed in order for the new app, V2 version of the app to be deployed. You have to do a bunch of things. First thing is, if you do this without telling people, or putting the machine in a maintenance mode, it's going to send a bunch of alerts, and there's going to be downstream impact that you have to deal with. At the same time, I don't, as a person responsible for this app, I don't have full knowledge in terms of all the things that I have to do. So either it's email or one of those things that most likely happen, and we want to streamline those things. And that's what I want to show today, is to how to bring that aspect of it. We talked about self-service, so you'll see a self-service here. You'll see automation, where self-service is driving the automation and making it a little bit easier. And in that process, I also want, both Eamon and I want to take advantage of the opportunity to share some best practices in terms of how you can actually bring these two products together. So let's get right to the demo. So what you see here is a self-service portal from Service Manager. So there are many such requests, and I've, for demonstration purposes, I can actually show the category view. So imagine that such a system exists, and as an IT admin who's responsible for an app, they'll just walk into some kind of a portal like this, and this can be customized. And one of the services that you offer is installation, software installation. So ignore the name for a second. It can be anything else. It was put together fairly quickly. But in this request, the intention here is to go back and then say, I want to install some software on this machine. And that's the request that I'm placing. And I really don't know anything else other than that, because I know my app. I know which servers that app is deployed on. I just need to go back and do this. Right? And what happens here is CMDB or Service Manager already has a list of machines in your environment. So when I walk up to this, I can go back and select the machine that I want to put it in, that I want to patch. And that's all is required. At this point in time, as an admin responsible for the app, I need to communicate my intent, and that's what I did. I'm just going to submit this activity. So at this point in time, what happens is the service request has been captured, and it's starting off a set of workflow. And we'll talk about that in a second. And this was already pre-configured by IT and made available. So what you see here is, fairly quickly, install software shows up. So the install software request, SR2659, has been registered in the system. And it's going to go through a bunch of things, steps. And those steps are, first is it's going to actually go, it already has the context, and the context is the machine. And it's going to go put that machine in a maintenance mode, and it's going to do that by communicating with Ops Manager. So let's quickly go to Ops Manager here and see. So I have an Ops Manager window here. So at this point in time, if you can see the screen, the marketing server is healthy and it's doing well. But when the automation request kicks in, at some point in time, this is going to flip over and then say, I'm done, I'm going to go into maintenance mode. And why is that required? Once it goes into maintenance mode, any health changes, state changes on the machines are not going to be treated as alerts, because the system now knows that you're in maintenance mode and it's registered. And why do you want to do this? Now it's all compliant. You have in Service Manager and CMDB a request, and that is automating it. There's no manual activity here. If you want to insert approvals, you can actually insert approvals in the process so that you can act. So your business process will dictate what needs to be done. But from a self-service standpoint, the person who's actually requesting this doesn't have to understand the complexity of what it takes to put a machine in maintenance mode. He's just requesting that he's expressing his intent. the IT admins decided that for this intent to be realized, the machine needs to go in maintenance mode. That's what they did. So let's go back and look at SM for a second. Oh, sorry, I should have waited for a little longer. So you just saw this. The icon flipped. It went into maintenance mode. So the maintenance mode here is an indicator that that machine, alerts on that machines are not going to be propagated anymore. What else is happening? So let me go refresh this for a second. So the first activity was putting the machine in a maintenance mode. And the so that's actually in progress. At some point in time, it will say completed. Next, it's going to create a manual activity. And the manual activity is an activity for the admin to actually go perform those tasks on the selected machine. So there will be a record in the system. They can walk into the SM console where they'll see a list of all the activities that I have to do. And one such activity will be, hey, you requested, now go back and do the job. And until that is done, the other activity will not continue. It will all be suspended until each of the sequential activities complete. And I can actually do that in the portal as well. It's a multimodal experience. You can actually come to the portal. You can actually do it in the portal. Or you can come back and do it in the console. So I'll do that in the console as well. So if I look at all the open service requests, let me just refresh it to make sure that I get this. So the software request, this came in very recently. It's still active because not all the activities are completed. When I go look at this one, I will show you the integration with Orchestrator. So service manager has workflow, and in the workflow, we have composed the fact that start this activity first, which is MM activity, and after that, schedule a maintenance, a manual activity, and after the manual activity is done, go back and flip the state of the maintenance mode out of it. So the icon that you saw will flip back to its normal state, which tells me that the updates have been done. And this gives a tremendous set of possibilities for you, even though it's highlighting one small aspect. What you can do is you can take advantage of other pending updates. You can add other things. You can add approvals in this picture. It all depends on what your business process wants to
do. You could even go and install software. With Orchestrator, we have tied into like SCCM. You could actually say the package is approved. Go ahead and install the package at this time because that's the window I want to do it. So it's really depending on what your processes are. You wouldn't even have to have the user go and do it. You could automate the entire thing. And so there's a lot of opportunities to actually do checks, update AD, install patches. Whatever you have to do can be automated in Orchestrator, and the end user only sees that they want to deploy software.
And the more important, you have a track record of all these things in CMDB, and you can actually go back and say who requested what and when was it done. So you have a So let me also show the deep integration links between Service Manager and Orchestrator. Yes, we have built an orchestrator that actually runs those things, but it's also you can navigate into that specific runbook. And let's look at the instances here. So this particular job is done, but let's go look at the details. You can actually see there are multiple steps for this particular runbook. The first thing is every runbook you'll probably find there's an initialized data that's setting the context. In this particular case, what we did was there's a service request that had an attached computer to it. If you remember that, we had a list of computers, and you selected which computer that you want to put in maintenance mode. There are two ways to how to structure this runbook. You can pass all the information that you gathered in Service Manager and then pass it as a set of parameters to the runbook. You can author it that way, or you can just pass a pointer, which is the service request ID, and then have the runbook go fetch all the related data because that's a lot more flexible. So we advocate the fact that you pass the service request ID and then use the rest of the SMIPs that the orchestrator team has actually built to go query all the objects. And that gives you tremendous flexibility to preserve the contract as well as the ability to, for you to change your runbooks if that is required, adding new things into it without affecting the... So the closest mental model that you can wrap around is there's a method, you can pass in thousands of parameters to the method, or you just have pass a pointer to that and have the method decide what to look for and which is the pattern that we are recommending.
I mean, just since you're talking about code, I would emphasize in order to do these all these scenarios, doesn't require a line of code.
Yes.
To build all those service templates you saw in the service portal, it's just configuration and forms-based authoring. Okay. And similarly on the orchestrator side, there's no code you have to write in order to accomplish these scenarios. The out-of-the-box activities, and if you do need to extend it, PowerShell is available, so you can extend it through PowerShell or through batch scripts, or if you want to, you can extend it through your own integration packs. But I would reinforce that in order to get up and running, it's just configuration and template building that you have to build inside Service Manager, and then Orchestrator is just drag and drop activity building.
Thanks, Eamon. That's a great point.
Because okay,
both
we'll take
Service Manager, it's all declarative, MP, as well as form-based development. So what you see in this runbook here, this particular runbook is completed. It's the reason why it shows all green here is that all these steps have been done, which is why you saw the icon flipped to the maintenance mode in Ops Manager as well. Had I come to this a little bit before, one of these will be showing in progress while that process is executing.
Yeah.
As I was saying sometime back, this runbook is fairly simple. It's just going to go back and get the data. The whole idea for this is to extract the computer that you specified in your drop-down box and then go mark that in maintenance mode. And we're going to use two kinds of IPs. One IP is the Service Manager IP to go get the rest of the data, and then we also use the Ops Manager IP to actually put the machine in that mode. If I can just quickly go here, and I'll probably see this. So as you can see, the runbook is completed. So as the end user who came and made a request, they can track how things are happening. While the request itself is still in progress, there are parts of it that are done.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, the runbook has now, one runbook has run, and that has actually put the machine in the maintenance mode.
Exactly. You can send notifications to the user that you're ready to install your software. You could say it's at a certain time, so you could schedule it's only going to go on Thursday after 6. And so they could put that in, and then the runbook would go and do its work based on what they need.
Right.
So it's totally flexible from that perspective. I know we only have a couple of minutes left, so
okay,
I want to just finish up, and then we'll do some Q&A for questions.
So let me quickly go to my activities, and then hopefully I'll find mine, and if I approve it and mark it complete. So this is the activity that is currently pending on my plate as a person requesting it. It's coming back and telling me that I have to now patch this server. 2661, and I can mark it complete. I'm saying done. So we are not actually, in the demo, we are not actually patching the server. This is a manual activity. It can be automated, but the intention here is to go back and say, here is an activity that has been scheduled, and until it's actually reached a completion state, the next activity is not going to happen. Until then, it's going to go stay here. So I'm just going to go and mark it done here, and if I go back to my request, at some point in time, it will trigger the next one. It'll take a few minutes to actually run this through.
That's fine.
So this is done, and the next one is starting. And that will actually put the machine out of the maintenance mode, ready for consumption again. So it's a very simple state, and I think that ends the demo.
Awesome, Srikanth. Let me go back and finish up just to... Okay, so we talked a little bit about what are the key takeaways of the session. I know we spent a lot of time. If you're not using Opalis or you're not using Service Manager, you know, it might be difficult to try to get your head around what does it really offer. Hopefully for those who you are using it, you have the path to get up to 2012. But I think the key message is there's lots of new capabilities in 2012, not just in Service Manager and Orchestrator, but across the entire suite. So learn what those are, because I think a lot of you will end up rewriting your processes to try to take advantage of this IT as a service that's being delivered. And when you bring automation and you bring your service catalog in, you can actually deliver on that. So if you start thinking about what is automation and what is Orchestrator or Service Manager, It really enables you, and you saw it in the demo, to integrate the human processes with the machine automation processes. It combines those two things together, so you can do everything in your data center. So you may need approvals, or you may need tracking. It can go back and forth between those two things to extend your full data center under the control of both these two systems. So that's what we have today. I hope everyone got information they needed out of it. We're going to stay around for a few minutes to answer additional questions. But I would ask everyone to fill in the eval form if you get a chance. We'd love to get your feedback on additional things you'd like to see. And with that, we're going to end now. And then if you have questions, please come up or ask them, and we'll be happy to go through it. Again,
thank you,
thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks a lot.